well for Theresa May over the weekend. She seemed to have some unity in the cabinet with that Chequers meeting. And then, we're hearing this morning that one of her main men, David Davis, has actually resigned. This is what Jeremy Hunt had to say about the resignation of the Brexit Secretary.
Well, there's no point in saying anything other than this is a big loss for the government. When we deliver a successful Brexit, which I'm certain we will, history will judge that David Davis was one of the great architects of that Brexit, the man who set up a government department to deliver Brexit, successfully piloted the EU withdrawal bill through the House of Commons, which got royal assent last week. And on a personal level, not just a very learned person, but someone of great integrity. So I don't think whether you agree with him or disagree, and people will be surprised that in the end he decided to resign on a matter of principle.
I want to speak to Jamie, often comments on things like this. Jamie DeLargy, good morning, Jamie.
Good morning, Frank.
It's interesting that Theresa May, over the weekend, she took the phones off them and told them if they didn't play ball with her, they'd have to walk the long mile from the Chequers house down the driveway to get a taxi home. And everyone seemed to sign up, but then when he drove home in his ministerial car, he then resigned. How big a blow is this to Theresa May, Jimmy?
I'm not sure that it's a huge blow, because he had been a critic. He was edgy before. The problem for Theresa May is if this motivates others, and principally Boris Johnson, to leg it. And if someone like Johnson goes, that would create a real problem for Theresa May. But I have a hunch that Boris Johnson will hang on in there. He's had the weekend to think about it. I think David Davis, as he explained himself this morning on the radio, had no option. I mean, he was the minister charged with delivering Brexit, and he said, look, I would then be in charge of and responsible for a policy I did believe in. Boris Johnson, the Foreign Secretary, is not in the same position. David Davis was in an untenable position given his hard Brexit views, and he had to go. Boris Johnson, I don't think, is under the same pressure. I think he'd maybe hang on in. If he hangs on in and there are no major figures to walk away, I think that she will carry the day in regard to this.
It's a challenge carrying it, but she knows the figures are in her favour. The hard Brexiteers, she's outnumbering them with the people who would be seen as the softer option.
Yeah, and I mean, if it came to it, it may well be in Parliament that there would be people in the Labour Party who would not seize the opportunity to bring her down, but in fact would support her. So at a really crunch vote, let's say, coming up to the Brexit date in March next year, it may well be that today, if she said, look, to basically the country, this is the best deal we've got. If you veto this, or you try and bring it down in some shape or form, we'll then just tumble out of the EU with any deal, which pretty much everybody, well, I know there are some people, but pretty much everybody thinks would be dreadful. So she is in a stronger position than I think people might imagine. The thing about it is, too, if you read the document, we still have to read the full white paper, but if you read the document was issued by after the Chequers meeting, it is Brexit, all right. I mean, we would be taking charge of our agricultural policy. We'd be taking charge of fisheries. This, make no mistake about it, this is Brexit. It's not the hard Brexit, but it's we would be out of the EU, and people would notice the changes coming down the line. And it would be very bad, and it seems to me, for local, if the proposed plan of Theresa May would be bad for local agriculture, because there would be the opportunity to bring in high quality New Zealand lamb in large quantities, high quality Argentinian beef. And what would that do to the local farming? I mean, there's an opportunity to bring in a lot of cheap food as long as we don't send it on to the EU, and as long as it would meet sort of those standards. But look, You know, so this is not like seemingly some people are almost like, oh, this is hardly Brexit at all. We're still stuck in. This is a big change. If it goes through, the question is whether the EU buys it.
Yeah, the EU may not buy it. The bottom line is you're saying it is still Brexit. People like Jim Allister don't say it is still Brexit. He says the resignation of David Davis is welcome in that it signifies at least one member of the cabinet is declining to buy the sellout on Brexit, which was the Chequers agreement. And he says at the heart of the Chequers declaration was a huge capitulation on the key issue at the heart of taking back control. By agreeing to accept the EU's rule book in respect of the trading of goods and in respect of agri-produce, Mrs. May has surrendered to Brussels control.
Yes, and it looks as if she's giving a place to the European Court of Justice, which is another no-no, another red line that she seems to be breaching. But still in the matter, we'd be out of the EU. I mean, yes, there are people who, and Jim Allister is one of them, and David Davis maybe to some extent is another, who really want nothing to do with the EU. You know, we will just be out. They will have no influence on it. We will do our own thing. We will decide our own policies and everything. We'll set our own standards. Our own courts will decide everything to do with our business. And, you know, that's a pretty extreme position. But the soft Brexit, what I'm saying is the soft Brexit that she suggests, everybody seems to be, you know, saying, oh, it's hardly Brexit at all. We'll notice it when we're out. If we were out on those terms next year, well, there would be a transition period. But when we were fully out, at the end of 2020, people wouldn't think, oh my goodness me, what was all that about? What was all that fuss about? This is the soft Brexit version she's limbering up to deliver is a pretty radical future for Northern Ireland and for the UK as a whole. Coming back to this point, will the EU buy it? I suspect that they will come and they'll say, well, this is a good start. They won't knock it back completely. I don't think they'll do that. But you don't know. But I think they'll say, I tell you what, you know, you're going to have to concede on more points. You're going to have to fire in a shed load of money. You're going to have to maybe weaken your position on controls, on movement of people. You know, and they will, because they keep talking about the indivisibility of these, the four pillars, you know, free movement of, I'll not go through them all, goods, services, capital, and people, and you know, if you start mucking about and conceding, you know, changes on one or and not on the others, well, we're not in favour of that. So, if they stick to their line that these four pillars, these four freedoms are indivisible, and that they can't be compromised in any way, Theresa May's plan will not fly. But I suspect that they will be a bit of horse trading and they will demand things and there will be some sort of deal at the end of the day. Because even though people talk, you know, everybody is taking a very, it's promises or threatens, you know, to be prepared for a no deal or else in both sides, the EU and the UK, I don't think in reality they would allow that. I think the EU is going to move some way to the UK position, and the UK is going to have to move closer to whatever that EU position is. But there is going to be a deal of some shape or form, and this document is probably going to be, you know, the basis for it, although it will be changed, I imagine, that in response to EU demands.
And you don't see a leadership challenge of any significance unseating Theresa May? You don't see a general election looming, any of those hiccups along the way, as far as you'd be concerned?
No, because, it would be almost like, and it's not necessarily the ideal analogy, it'd be almost like before a war saying, right, we've got to get rid of the Prime Minister, we've got to sack the head of the army, we've got to get rid of our top generals, right, let's go into battle now after that. It is the wrong time. Even the hardest Brexiteer, there may be some that are just like, you know, the red mist is ascending on them. But I would have thought that the vast majority of the Conservative Party, certainly enough to defeat any vote of no confidence, will stick behind Theresa May, even they have all these, if they have all these misgivings, because this is just not the time to unseat her and have a very divisive, leadership struggle. It just they won't do it now. They some of them might be minded to, and some of them might be thinking, God, just get rid of her. You know, this is a disaster. But they'll not do it now because they would leave themselves in such a weak position. I mean, EU would be rubbing their hands with glee and saying, look, we will now demand everything we want. But they won't. I don't think it could be wrong. I'll come back and say, how gosh got that completely upside down. But I don't think there will be a leadership challenge that will succeed. There might be somebody might throw their hat in the ring or something. But it'll get nowhere. There'll be no leader. Theresa May will be prime minister until at least March 31st.
Okay, Jamie De Largy, thank you very much indeed. Let me speak to Martin O'Mullier from Sinn Féin. Martin, good morning.
Frank, good morning to you.
Do you see our Prime Minister in a stronger position this morning without David Davis?
Well, I hope your Prime Minister is always in a strong position. I met David Davis several times on this issue. He was someone that, in fact, I think it's very hard not to like. I always said to him, I think you were born in the wrong century. I think he behaved like someone really from the days of empire. And he did fervently believe in this idea of Britain's splendid isolation and leaving behind the EU, and that they would chart a new course, no matter how diluted. I think I and others told him that position was. But we also said in our meetings, we used to tease him that, in fact, the only reason we had the Brexit referendum, which no one really thought would succeed, was because of Tory infighting. And it would be a tragedy now if Tory infighting hadn't been escalated over the weekend. The unity cabinet didn't actually last an entire weekend. It would be a real tragedy for us in the north, Frank, that if this new internecine warfare among the Tories would sabotage what we need from the Brexit debate. And of course, that is, we need the special status, unique status, and I suppose what's really, exemplified by the backstop. It doesn't give us everything we want, but we want the benefits, the rights and opportunities of Europe. The backstop for me is the goal. And of course, in this agreement, we've only had three pages, of course, at this stage, but this agreement again for the third time, the British say they will honour the backstop agreement.
So before David Davis threw a spanner in the works, and it may not be that critical a spanner, you were taking hope from the Chequers. You were looking at it and seeing some of what you were calling for.
Well, no, I've taken confidence and hope not from the Chequers, not from this attempt by Mrs. May to finally assert some authority over her warring cabinet. What I've taken great hope from is a number of things. First of all, that a majority in the North voted to remain. I think that's vital. And certainly when I addressed the ministers for Europe from 27 states in Brussels, and I know that meant a lot to them. If the vote had gone the other way in the North of Ireland, you'd be quite sure that Europe wouldn't have been so sympathetic or so determined to fight for continued membership of the customs union, the single market for us. So I take heart from that. But I also take heart from at every time when the British were pushed to the corner, they said, okay, we agree to the backstop. And the backstop really is much stronger than this agreement that we've had a glimpse of, because the backstop says that we will remain in the customs union. And of course, Europe has said that's the only way to avoid a hard border, and the Irish government, which has been very firm in this as well, has said that. And of course, the backstop says we'll remain in the single market. So I think I've taken heart from that despite the different factions within the Tory party, that at every stage they have said, okay, we've made a verbal promise, then they made a promise right in March, and again they've made another promise now. So that's three times. Now, surely even the British government won't say something three times and go against it. So if the backstop is indeed the position of the British, if everything else doesn't work, or if this position is rejected by Europe, and I think that there's no way that I think the British, even in their own negotiating position, expect that everything that is being put on the table by them and this new negotiating position will be accepted. by Europe. In particular, we know that Europe has rubbished some of these ideas for a separate customs trading area previously. But the backstop is where we need to keep our focus, Frank. And there is a difficulty because we listen to the news and we're caught up with the debate about what would be a good Brexit for the British. And we wish them a very good Brexit, but of course, there could be no good Brexit for us.
And you accept that some people would challenge your interpretation of the backstop if we listen to all the commentators who are coming at us like pepper out of a pot?
Well, I think that Michel Barnier and Leo Varadkar's interpretation of the backstop, I would agree with that. You're right, the British have not accepted the same analysis as the EU27. But that will have to be put to the test. I can't see how you can now sign up three times to the backstop, which says that we will remain in the customs union, and then deny that. The backstop also says we'll remain the single market for everything, in particular relates to North-South cooperation in the all-island economy. That covers 160 areas, including the services. It covers rights. It means that we would still have the rights, that the benefits and opportunities that we had before the Brexit referendum. So you're absolutely right. The British interpretation of the backstop and the EU27 interpretation of the backstop isn't the same. I think what we have to do is we have to insist, certainly as a Sinn Féin politician, we'll be insisting that the EU27 interpretation of the backstop, and of course they have agreed to the wording used by the British. So if the British are going to weasel out of this, I think it's going to be quite difficult for them to do that.
Okay, Martin O'Mullier from Sinn Féin, thank you.